Hello and welcome back to Travel Notes, a show where we use music as a medium to explore ways in which we're all connected. It is such a treat to be back in the Ohm Radio studio recording this show live from the refinery in beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. And I have a very special guest with me who is a professional violinist based here in Charleston. Her name is Laura Diaz. And while she was finishing her degrees in music performance, music history, and computer informational systems, she received a SURF 2021 grant to study Guatemalan composer Joaquin Orellana, post-institutional career, and how Guatemala's troubled history during the 1960s through the 1980s interfered with both Orellana's musical production and with audiences and scholars. She also documented and digitized his work. She perhaps was the first person in the United States to do this, and she not only archives it for generations to come, but also making it more accessible to people around the world. Laura, welcome to the show, and tell me, what initially drew you to Joaquin Orellana's work?
At the beginning of my undergrad in music, one of the first classes that we have to take is music as culture, or the discipline is better known as ethnomusicology, taught by one of my mentors, Dr. O'Brien. He gave us an assignment of bringing music into culture. So that was the purpose of the class. So what was better than looking back into my roots, which is Guatemala, where I was born and raised. And of course, that drew me into Joaquin Orellana, which is a very, very important artist in Guatemala. So that's how everything started, and the rest is history.
Truly. So, and for those listeners who maybe aren't familiar with Joaquin's work, could you tell us a little bit more about who he is as a composer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think as every other person, everybody has different phases, right? So I would like to talk about two different times that were very important in his life. So number one is young Joaquin being a violinist in the National Symphony of Guatemala. So he's this young gentleman playing in the National Symphony, and during breaks, everybody will go grab lunch, grab something to drink before coming back to long rehearsals. But young Joaquin Orellana will go into the conductor's music stand and look at the scores, because he never learned how to orchestrate, how to put music together, which is something that he had inside of him. He wanted to bring music that he was feeling, that he was hearing in his brain, to life. So this is how he learned how to orchestrate first, how to compose. Just during breaks, looking at scores, peeking at how conductors did their thing. So that's something very important. This is how he learned how to compose, how to orchestrate. So that's how he learned, and that's how he started this big adventure. And that's how he created one of his first compositions in 1965, Ballet Contrastes, that I'm guessing we're gonna come back to this later. So this is something very important. The reason why this is very important is because this same piece got him a full scholarship to Buenos Aires, Argentina, to one of the best institutions at the time for composers. So he went to the Ditella Institute in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and this is where he learned further how to compose, how to find his own style that was inside of him that he didn't know how to bring out. So this was very, very important, because after his residence in the Ditella Institute, he went back to Guatemala, and now with the tools that he had, he created his own instruments and his own music notations for those instruments, which is very unique. You know, he created a full set of new instruments that he uses in his compositions, and this notation, you know, I don't know how he came up with this, but it's very interesting.
He created his own language, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating. He essentially came in through the back door. I mean, he was a musician, and he was learning on the job, kind of backwards, like retroactively, how the composer is creating these scores, and then he goes to school, gets an education, and then just completely rewrites the script.
Yeah, his I guess curiosity is what draws to music. You know, it's a very important thing that we have to have as musicians, definitely. And Joaquin Orellana is a clear example of that.
Absolutely. We are going to play a piece here that Laura brought with her and suggested to kind of give you an idea of some of his instrumentation and how it sounds in action. Could you tell me a little bit about, is this marimba? So there's a New York Times article that where his, when his you know, instruments were on display at the Academy of Americas in New York City, the New York Times said this article about the different types of instruments, and he's completely rebuilt the marimba. Is that what this piece is about, or what's this piece about?
Yes, so the piece that we're going to hear in a bit is called Ramajes de una Marimba Imaginaria. So it is definitely based on the marimba. For those listeners who don't know, marimba is a symbol of Guatemala, is a very typical symbol of the music in Guatemala. So it's a very important instrument. If we want to talk about Guatemalan culture, it's definitely going to draw us to marimba. So he wants to draw his own roots as Guatemalan and creating his own touch, putting other instruments in there, which are his own instruments. So it's a very fascinating combination.
Let's check it out. This is Ramajes de una Marimba Imaginaria by Joaquin Orellana. And that was a little sample of the clip, the entire work. You can actually go on YouTube, and there is the entire performance, about 14 minutes long. It's a little long for radio, but it's cool because you can actually see in the video the notation, some of the notation that he uses. I mean, it's completely wild looking. It's not traditional music at all.
That's the purpose of not being traditional. Yeah, so the purpose of him doing this is he lived during these very hard years in our country. So the purpose was looking at the marimba not in a traditional way of being oppressed. He wanted to take the marimba out of the oppression years and doing something non-traditional to something new. So that's the purpose. I'm glad you said the word non-traditional.
Well, yeah, and it's really, I mean, it's interesting, and it sounds like the sounds that he's creating sound kind of futuristic in a way, almost.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. And what do you know what year that was
created? Yes, if I'm not wrong, this was after his Detella Institute residence. So maybe it was during the 80s.
The 80s. Okay, yes, cool. Probably. So definitely ahead of his time.
Yes.
Let's talk about, you mentioned there was a lot of kind of political, you know, turmoil going on in Guatemala. What were some of those political and cultural barriers that Orellana faced as a working musician?
Absolutely. So during starting in the 60s up to the 90s, so it was 30 years of civil war. So a lot of military presence in the country. And of course, if you talked bad about the government, you mostly disappeared magically, right? And Joaquin Orellana was one of them. He dared to create this opera and this opera says a little line that talks something bad about the military. So he was doing this tour in the whole country, performing this opera, and one of the generals came and sat down for the opera, you know, when he heard this line of one of the characters in the opera saying this line, he stood up and left. And then Joaquin Orellana's cousin used to work in the military, and he got to know that Joaquin Orellana was next on the list. So he came to warn him as a good family.
Yeah.
But also he went to his superiors and said, you know, these are just crazy musicians trying to make a living out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's just forgive them. And he did convince the military to forgive him. And lucky for us, we are still having Orellana in our world.
Wow, like he really saved his life, potentially.
Yes, he definitely did.
That is a really good story. That's crazy. And wow, there was no freedom of speech or expression, it sounds like, during this time. And he was still pushing the barrier, though.
Yeah, he was still pushing the barrier. And maybe another obstacle that can be presented, and is maybe something related as something that, as I mentioned before, is the cultural barrier. Music has been always in a very low level in a country as in Guatemala. It has never been as advanced as, you know, in Europe, in the US, or even in other countries in Latin America, even nowadays, unfortunately. So, you know, he was trying to learn how to orchestrate by picking at scores. Unfortunately, there was no formal education to teach somebody, you know.
Sure.
So definitely that's a cultural barrier that mm-hmm. we even have nowadays, that I'm a witness of. That that's why I'm here,
yeah,
trying to look for better musical education that I couldn't find in my country. So yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a barrier.
Is Joaquin, does he teach at all now, or has he done work with universities that you know of?
Not really, you know.
No,
that man is he just turned like 96.
Wow.
And definitely having some sort of health issues. He's mm-hmm. in really good shape mentally and physically. He maybe has some workshop assistants, and mm-hmm. he teaches them how to manage his instruments, of course, and his own notation. But he never had the time to go to the conservatory or to a university to teach theory or something like that, but he always tried to do something for culture in Guatemala, for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. You had a chance to talk to him and interview him, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
what was that like?
It was amazing. His mind is just, I don't know, it just blows my mind how he talks. Every single detail he remembers, even, you know, as I said, he's 96 years old. And he can still remember all the compositions he has created in all these years.
Wow.
He remembers exactly the year that he has composed them. He remembers the composing, the piece itself.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big character.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe him more than that.
Well, his music is a testimony to that, I think, too. Like, how innovative and just out of the box he's been as a composer. Let's talk about your Surf Grants project, because that was really epic. And it led to a Charleston Orchestra performance of it in 2021. It was two geniuses, Tchaikovsky and Orellana, conducted by Yuri Becker. It was hosted at the College Department of Music and performed. It was a premiere of, at the time he was 91-year-old, Joaquin Orellana's Ballet Contrastes. What was it like to have his work brought to life thanks to your work, and what went into making all of that possible?
Absolutely. You know, I would love to take all the credit, but I cannot. Mm-hmm. All of this wouldn't have been possible without, first of all, my mentors, Dr. O'Brien and Professor Yuri Becker, of course. And during that time, COVID was very recent. So the plan was I will travel to Guatemala and do all the work, the field work, myself. But unfortunately, that was not able to be done. So I had helpers back in Guatemala who are also helpers at Mr. Orellana's workshop. So they made all of this possible. They were practically my hands in Guatemala. They will send us the manuscripts digitized, and we were able to work from here. The big advantage of technology. So there were many pieces to bring this concert to life. Endless rehearsals of the orchestra. I asked my peers towards the end of the concert, you know, when we had it ready, it's like, so what do you guys think? They will be like, this is harder than Tchaikovsky. We play Tchaikovsky in that same concert. And I think the first barrier, one of the obstacles that we found in bringing this to life, is that thanks to technology nowadays, YouTube, if we are going to perform as musicians a piece, let's say, you know, if I'm playing Wieniawski Violin Concerto, I can go into YouTube and easily find 20 recordings from this amazing violinist.
Right.
And have those as reference. Unfortunately for this work, there was not really reference, so we had to trust our own interpretations. And it's something that I have to thank endlessly to Mr. Yuri Becker, who's also the conductor of the orchestra. Mm. He did an amazing job giving his own interpretation of the piece, having the pressure that knowing that we were going to show this to Mr. Orellana himself afterwards.
Oh, wow.
So I hope that we did a good job in our interpretation. And as far as I know, Mr. Orellana did approve of it.
Good. That's a bold move, you know, like it's in the music world, you know, covering or interpreting a piece by a living composer and then showing it to them. That takes a lot of courage. But I'm sure he appreciated the fact that you guys also went through the trouble to archive this and perform it and bring it to this part of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It was some of the goals for this project.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Orellana is a little bit old-fashioned. He still loves to write manuscripts. He refuses to go into a computer and use programs as Sibelius, which is one of the programs that we use to digitize this music.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother Nature doesn't forgive. So there has been occasions that rain hits and it's very bad that his workshop gets a little bit of flooding and manuscripts have gone wrong.
Oh, no.
But luckily he writes them again, but we're gonna reach a point where that cannot be done anymore.
Right.
So it was one of the goals to have this digitized if something happens.
And so the final project, you digitized the entire work of the Ballet Contrastes.
Yes, and a little bit biased here, me mm-hmm. being a violinist, but we also did all of his works that he had for violin and piano and some voice works as well.
Amazing. That was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. I wish the day had more hours.
Yeah.
I wish we didn't have to sleep so then I can spend 24 hours just on that. But yes, I think we did as much as we could.
Amazing. Well, let's dive in and listen to some of this. This first segment we're going to listen to. Tell me a little bit about what this first segment is.
Yeah, the first segment. So the Ballet Contrastes is a main theme and 10 variations. So the first timestamp that we're going to listen to is going to be the main theme.
Beautiful. Let's check it out. And that was the main theme of the ballet. So That feels to me like a very traditional kind of opening statement for a symphony. Were there any, and maybe there are down the road when we get to these other two segments, but like, did you guys have to bring in any new instruments or like kind of crazy concepts for this performance?
You know, that's something that we wanted so bad. But of course, resources were limited. We're very thankful for the resources that we got from the SORF grant, but it was not enough to bring the instruments from Guatemala. They are very big. So it's something that we really wanted to. So we had limited resources. So what could we do? We were able to do something just with traditional symphony. Uh-huh. And this is a very important piece in Joaquin Orellana's life. As I said, this piece allowed Joaquin Orellana to get a full scholarship to the Ditala Institute, which was a very important moment in his life. So that's how we decided how to do this. But it's definitely a crazy piece. So right now it feels traditional, but just hold on.
It gets wild.
Yes.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up. Okay, so what's the second theme or timestamp?
So I chose this second timestamp because the main theme sounds, you know, very lyrical, mm-hmm. still very traditional. And then he, as every other variation goes, he starts putting the theme upside down, left to right, right to left, up cool. to down. So he does all these things. So that's why I decided to put this second timestamp to show that the theme is still there, but in a different way.
Cool. Let's check it out. That was riveting. It was so exciting. Excuse me. It literally took my breath away. No, I was gonna we were gonna cut it a little shorter, but just got so, it built up so much we couldn't. I had to listen to a little bit. So that is just really, I don't know, his sense of the crescendo and just so emotive.
Yeah, definitely. The dynamics are always wild in everything he does. But I also chose this timestamp because, you know, the beginning that we heard was very lyrical, very musical. And the second timestamp gets a little bit playful, but also wild. So you can have all these emotions just in one piece. Mm-hmm. So it's something great that he always does. Full of emotions, full of dynamics, full of percussion and yeah. brass.
Yeah, it really. So, and you talked a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced while working on this project, COVID being one of them. What were some of, and then there was no previous recordings. Were there any other challenges that kind of stand out to you now, even looking back?
I think I did mention a little bit of time.
Yeah.
The project, it was supposed to be just during summer. So it's even a little bit less than a semester. So we did 3 months during summer. We did extend it a little bit during fall. But of course, fall was a little bit hard to do because having classes and, you know, whatnot, going back to school. But still, we did a lot of work during fall. Yeah, I think we achieved a lot in a very short amount of time. You know, obstacles just make you stronger sometimes.
You know,
we made the best out of it.
You're right, 100% right on that. And I feel like that's very much in the spirit of Orellana too. You know, his obstacles really made him who he is as a composer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you've touched on this a little bit, but I want to kind of ask, you know, it as a question, you know, specifically, but why was it so important for you to, like, why was it so important to digitize this work? Like, as you, you're a violinist, you're from Guatemala. Tell me, like, you know, what the motivation and inspiration behind that?
Of course, I really want to be part of building a legacy for him. You know, if we think about a composer, traditional composer like Mozart or Beethoven, we can go on internet and find very easily their works, their music sheets, and perform them. It's something that we don't have for Orellana. So we want people to know about him. We want people to know about his work. And I think digitizing his work is a very important first step. First of all, not for us not to lose the work and maybe not recover it ever. Mm-hmm. And then for making it available for people. So thanks to that, we purchased from him the work, and it's available at the library at the College of Charleston. So now the College of Charleston has a copy of the full work, which so is epic. Great. Maybe, you know, in 30, 40 years, somebody will go back to the library at CFC and say, hey, this is a very interesting work. Let's perform it. And I will be very happy that I was part of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really is helping, yeah, with his legacy and bringing two worlds together. I mean, Guatemala and Charleston, two places that hadn't yet quite really fused in a musical way like this. So, and it resulted too on YouTube, you can actually, there's a documentary of sorts that's been created for the project.
That is right, yeah. Because of this work, it brought the attention of a famous journalist in Guatemala, and she decided to come to Charleston and cover the whole project. So we did interviews. She did a professional shoot of the whole concert that you can watch online. So I guess that's also part of the legacy of Orellana. Now the recording is out there, and we have as College of Charleston Orchestra as a reference for the future. Is definitely great, as you said, bringing two worlds together.
Totally.
Now there's a little link in there.
And it's on YouTube. It's the best part. That's yes. The craziest thing about technology these days. And it's called, if you go on YouTube, it's called Ballet Contrastes, Tema y Variaciones de Joaquín Orellana. And the person who's published it is called Azucuan.
Yes, that's a magazine. It's a cultural magazine that she works for. So that's the name of the cultural magazine in Guatemala. It's a great cultural magazine.
Very cool. Well, let's dive into the third segment. Tell me a little bit about this one.
So it's going to be different from what you heard from the previous timestamps. So this was a very revolutionary work because it was the first of its kind, at least in Central America. So Joaquín Orellana has been always ahead of his time. So he used electroacoustic pre-recorded sounds to do this. He wanted to make this little feeling of eerie music, almost like scary movies. Mm-hmm. So what you're going to hear is actually his voice. He's doing all the sounds except for some instruments that he used, magnetic instruments that he used to make these sounds, which is going to be great. So buckle up.
Here we go. Hope you enjoy. Thank you.
That was spooky.
Yes.
I could feel the tension and building, you know, and definitely a little like Alfred Hitchcock vibes.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly what he wanted. So it's great also the combination that he uses of these sounds with traditional instruments. You know, we have cello in there, yeah. We have piano, percussion, brass, then the violins come in. It's great.
Did the cellist do something kind of like a slide? I don't know. I thought I saw something.
Yeah, that was the timpani. The timpani has a little pedal to change sound. So
cool.
It will give a hit to the timpani and then press this pedal that will change the sound. So that's the little like glissando that you hear.
Cool. It's really fun to watch this live. And so it's all in the documentary on YouTube. And yeah. And so maybe we'll play a little bit more here at the end. But so tell me, what do you have going on? You're an artist, a working musician, violinist. What are you, do you have any current projects you're doing or dreams that you're working towards?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that question. So right now I'm working full time at MUSE, non-music related, mm-hmm. but it gives me the great flexibility to keep doing my music, what I love. So I think the key for all musicians is improvement. So it's definitely something that I keep working on. I want to improve, go to the next level. So right now the project that I'm working on is I want to do a little tour of assisted living facilities or nursing homes. Mm. I have a very important person in my life that was a big supporter of my music that passed away last year. Mm. He was a big patron and supporter of mine, and he used to live in one of the facilities in Mount Pleasant, and his requests was always to perform for his friends. Was something that I was not able to do in the past. I did perform for him several times in Spoleto or Piccolo Spoleto. He came to see me in different recitals that I gave. But I want to do, the first concert is going to be at the facility that he used to live in.
Mm-hmm.
In his memory, it's going to be almost a year of his mm-hmm. passing. And I want to bring that happiness that I brought to him to other people. So it's definitely, it's a work in process. I want to do a tour of assisted living facilities with my amazing pianist and friend that I played for years. We make Aww. A great team. We are preparing a repertoire for that already. The first concert is going to be September 14th.
Okay, awesome. That is such a great idea, honestly, because I can't think of a better way to bring music to people who really will appreciate it, you know, and it really brings them so much joy and happiness. Just, that's such a good idea. So are you thinking performing at a few places here in Charleston and then maybe outside, like travel with it to different assisted living?
That will be great. You know, I am planning to start in Charleston and then let's see where that takes me.
That's awesome. That's such a great idea. And, yeah, where can people find you online, or in terms of following your music and that kind of thing?
Yes, I think I have a couple of stuff on YouTube, but maybe not. I have them as not listed, so probably you're not gonna find me on YouTube yet. I'm still shy of showing how I play, but definitely you can find me on Instagram. I post always pictures and snippets of mm-hmm. of concerts that I've had recently. So my Instagram is China_DC. That's where you can find me and reach out and say hi. Mm-hmm. If you want to play something together, I'll be down.
Amazing. So good. Laura, it's been such a treat. We met at badminton for people who are wondering, where does Grace find these people too? And honestly, it's just random. Like, it was such a serendipitous moment. We were catching our breath. Laura is an excellent badminton player, let me tell you guys.
I don't know if I will describe me as that, but I definitely enjoy playing badminton.
Yeah, there's a great, it's a group of people who get together regularly, and it's awesome. And so that's where we really met, and she told me about her work, and I was just like, oh man, you got to come on the show and talk about it. And so I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's been listening, tuning in, who has tuned in to past episodes. And thanks for listening here on OM Radio 96.3 FM. You can find Travel Notes anywhere you listen to your podcasts and online at gracemcknightmusic.com under the Travel Notes tab. And until our next adventure, wherever that might be, wishing you peace, harmony, and smooth travels.
All right, hopefully I can convince you to play with me some guitar violin.
Oh, you know, I am down. What were we talking about playing together?
I think The History of Tango by Piazzolla.
Oh man, that's going to make me practice.
Me too, you know, improvement. See, the key word for musicians, improvement.
Improvement, that's right, that's right. And we'll leave you actually with a little bit more of the Ballet Contrastes by Joaquin Orellana, and wishing you a beautiful rest of your Monday evening. Thank you.